Our study tonight is out of Jeremiah chapter 45, verses 1 through 5, God's personal admonition against selfish ambition. James chapter 3, verses 14 and 15, both in the ESV and the NIV, claims that selfish ambition is ungodly, and that it is even earthly and of the devil. However, this vice can hold a believer in its grip. And a lesson on this issue is offered us in Jeremiah 45, 1 to 5. I'd like to read it. It's one of the shortest, if not the shortest chapter in the book of Jeremiah, just five verses long. Jeremiah chapter 45. The word that Jeremiah the prophet spake unto Baruch, the son of Neriah, when he had written these words in a book at the mouth of Jeremiah, in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, saying, Thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, unto thee, O Baruch. Thou didst say, Woe is me now, for the Lord hath added grief to my sorrow. I fainted in my sighing, and I find no rest. Thus shalt thou say unto him, The Lord saith thus, Behold, that which I have built will I break down, that which I have planted I will pluck up, even this whole land. And seekest thou great things for thyself? Seek them not. For behold, I will bring calamity upon all flesh, saith the Lord. But thy life will I give unto thee, as a reward or as prey in all places whither thou goest. Okay, this is a chapter that we have to understand the context in. Otherwise, it doesn't make too much sense. And the context is everything. Jeremiah 45:1 claims that Jeremiah 42:2-5 is a message God gave to Baruch through means of Jeremiah. And remember, Baruch was Jeremiah's scribe. When Baruch took dictation from Jeremiah, writing his words down in a book in the fourth year of King Jehoiakim, that's very important because that takes us back to the event itself. To appreciate God's Jeremiah 45:2-5 message to Baruch, we review the dictation event that occurred in Jeremiah chapter 36, verses 1 through 32. So I'm going to go back to that. Jeremiah 36. All right. In this passage, God had told Jeremiah to write in a scroll all the words that he'd spoken against Israel, Judah, and the Gentile nations of judgment, going back to the reign of Jehoiakim's father, good King Josiah. Let me read those verses. Jeremiah 36, 1 and 2. And it came to pass in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, that this word came out of Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, Take thee a roll of a book, that would be a scroll, and write therein all the words that I have spoken unto thee against Israel and against Judah and against all the nations from the day that I spoke unto thee, even from the days of Josiah, even to this day. Now, what was the Lord hoping for? The Lord had hoped that the reading of these words in this book might cause the people in the king of Jehoiakim's era to respond as Josiah had responded, by repenting at the finding and reading of the book of the law in the temple, that God might bless and not judge the nation. In Jeremiah 36, verse 3, it says, It may be that the house of Judah will hear all the calamity which I purpose to do unto them, that they may return every man from his evil way, that I may forgive their iniquity and their sin. The reason God was saying, go ahead and write this down and then read this book, is because you'll remember in 2 Kings 22:1, they found a book in the temple of the Lord when they were going through and clearing it out. And they had it read in front of the king. And Josiah had never had the law. He didn't know. You know, it was just word of mouth. That's how he's worshiping the Lord. But this is the first time he ever heard the law, and they read the law. And when it was read to him, he realized, wow, are we in trouble? Great wrath of God is against us. So he tore his clothes, even though he's a king, tore his clothes, expensive clothes. And he said, find a prophet and get some word from God. We're in trouble. And find out what we can do, see if we can get out of trouble. And they found, they didn't have any male prophets. They were out of the area, even though Jeremiah was in the area. They found a female prophet, a lady prophet, who was in the poor section of Jerusalem. And her name was Huldah, I believe it was. And they contacted her, and she received a word from the Lord that said, The Lord said, that, yes, he's planning judging Jerusalem, but because the king who sent you, that means Josiah, has repented at the reading of the law, I'm not going to do this judgment in his day, but it'll happen after his time. But in his day, there will be peace. Well, when Josiah heard that, he instituted reforms throughout the countryside, and he broke down every idol you can think of. He went up to the northern kingdom of Israel that was had long since been taken captive by the Assyrians, and he broke down idols up there. And it was just an amazing thing. So God was hoping, well, maybe his son, Jehoiakim, will respond. Well, since Jeremiah was then restricted from going to the temple, possibly due to negative reactions to his messages of judgment, he had his scribe Barak write down the words by dictation from his mouth and go and read the scroll in the temple on a fast day when all the people were in attendance. He did that in verses 4 to 8. When Barak heeded Jeremiah's command, news of the scroll's message concerned some of the officials who heard them, and they arranged for him to hide from King Jehoiakim in case he rejected the scroll's words, while they took the scroll to have it read in front of the king. Notice in verse 19, then said the princes unto Barak, you go hide yourself, you and Jeremiah, let no man know where you be. They knew that the king might not respond positively. If the king didn't respond positively, he'd be after them, probably to kill him. So Barak went to hide himself. Well, Barak heeded Jeremiah's command, and the officials heard it, arranged for him to hide while they took the scroll to the king. Well, King Jehoiakim responded negatively to the reading of the scroll in his presence. Against the request of some of the officials present, he cut each leaf that had been read as it was being read, and he burned it in the winter fire that he had in the room to keep himself warm. They apparently had one of these hot pots. And so as each page was burned, he had a short knife, and he cut it off, and it was lambskin, and so he threw it in the fire and just to keep himself warm. That shows what he thought of the word. He didn't respect it at all. So King Jehoiakim burned it. He cut each leaf that had been read as it was read. He burned it in the winter fire that he had in the room to keep himself warm. Well, Jehoiakim then commanded that Barak the scribe and Jeremiah the prophet be arrested, that he presumably might punish them. But the Lord had hidden them for their safety. In verse 26, the king commanded Jeremiah the son of Hamalek and Sariah the son of Azrael and Shelemiah the son of Abdeel to take Barak the scribe and Jeremiah the prophet. But the Lord hid them. Now, we don't know how the Lord did this. All we know is that the Lord hid them. And that's the important part. God didn't want these men slain at that particular time. Well, God then directed Jeremiah to take another scroll, write the same words that he'd written in the first scroll that Jehoiakim had destroyed, and to add many other similar words of judgment to them. Jeremiah was to tell King Jehoiakim that he would have no descendants to sit on David's throne, and that his dead body would be dishonorably exposed to the elements rather than even being buried, which was a big shame in those days. Jeremiah then directed his scribe Barak to write the second book by dictation from his mouth. Verse 32 at the end of that chapter 37 says, then Jeremiah took another scroll and gave it to Barak, the scribe, the son of Neriah, who wrote therein from the mouth of Jeremiah all the words of the book which Jehoiakim, king of Judah, had burned in the fire. And there were added besides unto them many like words. So, you know, you might burn a Bible, but that doesn't mean that the word of God doesn't exist. It still exists. So the Lord kept it going. Okay, that's the background for what God is telling Barak here in chapter 45. So now we go back to chapter 45. Now, this harrowing series of events that threaten not only Jeremiah but also Barak upset Barak's personal plans in his life. For heeding Jeremiah had led him to become an outlaw to the king's court. See, apparently Barak was planning some great things for his life, and he was planning to become famous, planning to become accepted and so forth amongst the court. And writing what Jeremiah's words at his dictation made him an outlaw to the king. It messed up his plans for his life. And so that's where we read that the Lord is mimicking Barak's complaint. In verse 3, thou didst say, woe is me now, for the Lord hath added grief to my sorrow. I fainted in my sign, and I find no rest. complaining because it's hard. It's hard serving the Lord. Mm. Have heard this. In fact, I must admit that I've actually been in this type of situation before myself. So God's message to Barak at this time, as recorded in verses 2 to 5, countered his selfish ambition. The Lord noted that Barak had complained in the incident of becoming outlawed by King Jehoiakim, that God had added sorrow to his pain, that he was wearied with his groaning, finding no rest. Accordingly, God responded to Barak's complaint by explaining that he was in the process of breaking down all that he'd built up in Judah and Jerusalem, that what he planted by way of Judah's institutions he was plucking up, and that of the whole land of Judah. Now that's interesting. If Barak is planning on becoming rich and famous in Judah, yet God is planning to uproot the whole land, when he becomes rich and famous, it's not going to be worth diddly when Judah turns into a pile of rubble, right? Because all the people will be slain or taken captive, and you know, you can be standing there with your trophies and everything, and nobody cares. So what good is it? And when you think in terms of what's going to happen in the near future, God's informing him, you know, it doesn't make sense for you to try to have a selfish ambition as far as Judah is concerned, because Judah is on the time clock. You know, the time bomb is ticking on Judah, and she's going to go boom with the Babylonian invasion. So what are you doing? So for Barak to seek great things for himself when God was about to break down all that he had instituted in Judah, to practice selfish ambition in a doomed society, is not only sin, but foolishness, since such fame would become non-existent when Judah was in ruins. He was not to seek great things for himself. Verse 5a, "And seekest thou great things for thyself? Seek them not." There was a famous ice skater who she trained near where my wife, you know her name. She won no better than the silver medal in the Olympics, but she was a figure skater. And she was a Christian. And she was disappointed when she didn't win the gold medal, but she gave a test. I heard a testimony that she gave. This passage in Jeremiah hit her. The Lord said, "Seek thou great things for thyself, seek them not." It's just an Olympic medal. That's all it is. And you get in a medal from because you went in the ice skating. There's a judgment. Judges judge you as to whether you're better or not as good as the other ice skater from Russia or whatnot. So you got a silver medal. So that's interesting. I heard another Olympic skater one time. He was a nice skater, and he would skate around in the rink, and he had tried several times to win a gold medal, and he was very discouraged. And his father came to him, and he said, "Why are you so upset? All you do is skate around in circles." And the ice skater said, "That put it in proper perspective. I'm getting a gold medal for skating around in circles. Well, I didn't get a gold medal, so what's the big deal?" Well, later he did. In the next Olympics, he did get a gold medal. But he said that put it in a proper perspective. I'm just skating around in circles. But that's what the Lord was indicating here. Don't seek great things for yourself. Rather, he was to be grateful to the Lord that he would give him as booty his life. Booty is what you would take in war, that he would not be slain. Wherever he went, did you notice the last part of verse 5? "I will give unto thee your life for a prey in all the places whither thou goest." Now that's very important, because later the exiles from Judah forcibly took not only Jeremiah but Barak down to Egypt with them. And guess what's going to happen in Egypt? Babylon's going to come down and invade there. So God is promising, "I'm going to protect you even if Babylon goes down to Egypt." So that's a real blessing. And we take it that probably Jeremiah had his life spared too, because God would have treated his scribe much like the prophet. So who knows? Maybe Jeremiah was actually able to get out from Egypt after it fell and went back to the land of Judah. We don't know. Jeremiah just sort of disappears in history, and that's about it. But what's interesting here is that God's calling was the only sensible one for Barak to heed. for achieving any selfish goal would be undone by the Babylonian invasion that would destroy Judah. Only what Barak did for God would be of lasting value. And it really is, because the chapter that we have on Barak is chapter 45. That's it. It may well be, since Jeremiah was an elderly man at this time, that Jeremiah predeceased Barak in death, and Barak kept the scroll and passed it on to other Jewish scribes, maybe to Ezra, who later came back. Remember, he came back as the leading scribe, and of course he wrote the book of Ezra and so forth. It may be that Barak was the one that preserved the books of Jeremiah, so that was his great contribution to the eternal plan of God. So the most important thing he did was not becoming rich and famous in Judah. He was ministering as the man who took dictation from Jeremiah the prophet. So regardless of the cost, Barak was to reject vain, selfish ambition to do God's eternally invaluable will. So regardless of the cost, may we reject vain, selfish ambition to do God's eternally invaluable calling. When I graduated from high school, in our school's closing assembly, since I'd been a student body president one of the years there, I received as an award, along with the other student body presidents, a gavel, you know, in the state of the year that I was there. And there was, I got an award in track, there was an award in football, and there was an award for the trumpet for the Bank of America award. And so I had these awards in my hand. I remember I was leaving the high school, and I turned around and looked back, and I thought, this is silly. This award only means something to me and to the people who are there, but we're probably never going to see, the whole assembly is never going to be back. I mean, the high school, the senior class is graduating, we're going to be splitting off. I've never been back to any of my classes, reunions, or anything. And I remember there was a strange, empty feeling that what was the use of all these rewards? I mean, it was, they were handing awards out to high school students. But at that point, I realized, you know what? I want to work now for the awards of eternity, because these earthly rewards, they're so transitory. Now, I've kept them, but they're up on my shelf in my closet, and they've been there for years. But I go there and I look at these awards that are hiding in my closet, and you know, they might mean something to me and memory and so forth. Most of the kids who were at the high school probably forgotten all about them. Wouldn't know what I'd wanted or anything or why. And it's a healthy reminder that if we look for rewards in this life, it's an exercise in foolishness to do. We need to live for the life that is to come and serve the Lord. And this is a wonderful chapter here, this brief chapter, and it's something that I know it has encouraged and given me direction in times, even in low times of serving the Lord. Because serving the Lord, even if it's difficult, is far better, because what you're doing lasts forever. The world is passing away in the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God is abiding into the age. So you're much better off mopping floors or scrubbing floors in the church for serving the Lord than doing something else if it's not the Lord's will. And so may God encourage us to heed the words that God gave to Barak. Don't seek great things for ourselves. Just seek the will of God and be happy with it.